CNN has learned that congressional investigators will recommend the appointment of another special prosecutor, this time to investigate the Inslaw case. At issue are allegations that the Reagan administration stole computer software. The case also involves the death of a journalist.
Change has come to America.
The truth out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency.
I've now been in 57 states.
On a sunny day in the heartland of America, this is PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
I am Mrs. Derek Gilbert. That would be Sharon Gilbert for all of you who are brand new. And welcome to our humble bunker.
Today is Sunday, October the... What is today?
Third, fourth.
10-4.
Four fingers.
Good buddy.
Four fingers.
And boy, have we got stuff to talk about today. This is going to be an action-packed hour, and you'll forgive us if we sound just a little foggy vocally today. We took up some carpeting yesterday, and boy, you wouldn't believe the dust that sifts through the carpeting and the padding.
If you have ever wondered what's underneath the carpet in your house, we know.
Don't look. It's frightening. So anyway, we're dealing with the after effects, the allergic reaction to all that dust.
Yeah, well, Sam's dealing with it, too, underneath his Colt's Binky and a Sunbeam.
Yeah, well, life is good. You get a Colt's Binky in the Sunbeam. That is a good day for a dog. So, well, there's a lot to talk about. And there's a murder case. Charge has been filed in a 28-year-old murder case, and we'll talk about this in just a little bit, that has ties to just about every major conspiracy of the last quarter century or longer. It is.
And once you tie into that, you tie into so many other things.
Yeah.
It's pulling on the rug, the little thread that's hanging from the mm-hmm. rug underneath. You pull on that and suddenly it goes to another one and another one and you have no rug anymore.
Yeah, and all you're seeing is all the filth that sifted through the carpet down to the floor beneath, which is why I brought that up at first.
That's a really good little metaphor there, honey.
Yes. So that's kind of what I thought we would use as the metaphor for today. You know, lifting up the rug and exposing the dirt beneath.
Ew.
Yeah. It just, especially when you get down to microscopic level and you see all those dust mites down there.
I didn't even think about that. Thank you very much.
Well, that's the mental image we're working with here. First, though, some interesting other geopolitical things to talk about as we move ever closer to the one world government. Of course, the Irish have voted again and again until they finally got it right, and they've approved the Lisbon Treaty, which now
No. They finally got it right, not in our eyes.
Not in our eyes. According to
they should have voted no again.
Exactly, and according to the global puppet masters, they finally got it right.
Mm-hmm. Tony Blair is dancing on his desk.
Right, because Mr. Blair would appear to be the odds-on favorite to become the first official president mm-hmm. of the geopolitical entity called the European Union.
Exactly. Right now they have a president, but it rotates every 6 months. So they take turns among mm-hmm. the 27 members. And he'll be the first, assuming he makes it, he will be the first permanent, so to speak, EU head, which I think in prophecy is really important because the European Union, I think, plays a big role in prophecy, which if you've ever studied, you know, biblical eschatology, you know that there are talk of the seven-headed beast and the ten-headed entity. It could well be that the EU is represented there.
Mm-hmm. what's interesting about this whole European Union thing is that it's essentially being enacted without most of the people who will be living under this new mm-hmm. geopolitical entity, having the opportunity to vote. The Republic of Ireland is the only one to have put it to a referendum of its people.
Mm-hmm. They were really trying to stop it, and they almost
right.
did.
Mm-hmm. They defeated it by about 7% in June of 2008 and came up again. And it looks like, well, they have voted in favor of the Lisbon Treaty, which, again, is sort of a back doorway, as we understand it, of mm-hmm. enacting a constitution for the European Union.
So. Well, right now in the UK, the Tories are very, very much they wanted it to be voted down because they're very much against Blair taking over as the president. I think the fear there is that Blair will sell the UK down the river. Mm-hmm. That suddenly the pound will no longer work. It really will go to the euro for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And personal freedoms that you're granted under the individual countries, the states, individual constitutions or charters, they'll disappear.
Essentially the same thing happening there that we are looking at taking place here mm-hmm. in North America with the ultimate merger of the United States, Canada, and Mexico.
Right, because the Lisbon Treaty is essentially the constitution mm-hmm. for the EU.
Right. And again, this is a backdoor way of getting it through because mm-hmm. a couple of EU states did vote on the EU constitution or an EU constitution a couple of years ago. And much to the surprise of the elites, the French and the Dutch voted it down. I believe it was the Dutch, either the Dutch or the Danes, but the French were one. And they had expected it to pass and didn't. So this Lisbon Treaty was sort of another way of getting it through without having to put it to a vote of the people.
You know, speaking of the Danes, there was action there in Copenhagen over the last week, and our president did not come out looking nearly as good as he dreamed he would when he went over there.
The irony of this is that the White Sox fan that he is, he came out looking more like the Cubs. He did not fare well in October.
I don't know if you've seen the news today, but apparently it's being spun now that it has nothing to do with Barack Obama, which honestly it probably doesn't.
No.
That it's all the fault of the U.S. Olympic Committee.
Which is very possible.
Yeah, they blew it. They just totally blew it is what the article's saying, what the spin is. That they're inexperienced, they went in, they didn't know how to work the system.
Which means bribe.
Yeah.
Because that's how it came out later. That's how Salt Lake City got the games a few years back.
Well,
they played the game and paid the money to the right people.
You have to wonder, though, why Madrid didn't get it, because the head of the IOC, very much in Madrid's corner. He, in fact, made an impassioned plea.
The former head of the IOC.
Oh, was it the former?
Yeah,
sorry. I thought he was the current head.
No. The guy is retired now. He's 89 years old, but he was the longtime head of the IOC and still carried a lot of clout.
Well, I guess it wasn't enough, and it's Rio!
I have to guess, though, if just looking in from the outside, if you assume that the bribery package, just kind of discount that for a moment, it's possible that just from a political correctness standpoint that the IOC was not willing to grant two Olympic Games in a row to Anglo-Saxon nations, essentially Anglo-Saxon nations, because London's got it in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
So to go from one English-speaking nation, London, to England.
You just
rather,
dinged.
To,
why did you ding?
It's this old chair. It's a spring.
Oh. You may not have heard it on the recording, but Derek's sitting over there going, ding, ding.
Yeah, it's the spring that holds the back of the chair up. I'm glad it's dinging, because if it stops dinging, the chair is probably sprung, and I'd fall backwards, and that would
hurt. Be no good.
Yeah. So, anyway.
Well, the other thing that's going on in the
world. But you mentioned the Dane. I thought you were going to talk about the Dane, who was one of the characters in Miller's Crossing that I watched last night.
So. Oh, you finished watching it. I only watched the first part of it. Well, anyway, no. No, also going on in the world, of course, we've had a number of earthquakes. You need to pay special attention to what's going on in the Ring of Fire right now. It's the rim that goes around the Pacific, and it goes through Indonesia and up around Japan and way up on the far eastern side of Russia, and then comes
around Alaska right.
and the western seaboard of the United States. And in fact, right now in Central California, very close to the what is it called, the Lake Valley Caldera, they are just experiencing this massive earthquake swarm, and many of them are fours and fives.
And it's...
That's
you,
an
you
old
mentioned,
super
you mentioned yesterday. Yeah,
an old super
caldera.
Volcano
yeah.
just north of there.
Right. You know, Tommy Lee Jones, calling Tommy Lee Jones.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the other day, and watching the USGS website, that the... this cluster of quakes that they were reporting made it look like it was, you know, the area was ringing like a bell. It was to me, it was not ringing like a bell as much as it was ringing like an alarm clock.
Yeah,
because it was, you know, these quakes, which I guess Californians are used to feeling, are what, two
I'm
and a half?
I'm not so sure that little Keeler, California, is used to having these
magnitude 2.5 and greater.
Well, a lot of them are fours and fives. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's about every 10, 15 minutes they'll get a four or a five. That's a pretty significant shake.
Yeah, it is. That was about the size of the quake that hit the Midwest about a year ago. Was it northwest of Evansville, Indiana, in east central Illinois? it just felt over a wider geographic area because mm-hmm. the geology of the Midwest is different than it is out west. But yeah, we felt it.
But here, we did have a quake in the near the New Madrid area yesterday.
Mm.
Small one.
Well, that area, yeah, will often have minor shakes. Yeah, yeah, that's why does. The quake in East Central Illinois.
This Central California thing, I think, is very important to keep an eye on because a few years ago, I think it was back in 2007 or so, it was noticed that some of the area's water sources, like hot springs, it's called Hot Creek, that it was had boiling water and some six-foot geysers coming up.
Boiling water would indicate a heat source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was killing off the fish. Uh-huh. Yeah, there's definitely some activity going on underneath this old caldera.
Uh-huh. Well, again, something to keep an eye on. And we'll post a link to the USGS website where they...
I already got it at PID.
Well, PID News. There you go.
PID. By the way, PID News is now at PIDnews.com, so it right. all makes sense now.
Yeah, and pretty soon what we'll start doing is just putting an auto forward at peeringintodarkness.com to PIDnews.com to just move you over there. But PIDnews.com is a great news source. Make that your homepage if you're interested in looking mm-hmm. at the kind of news that... That we draw upon for mm-hmm. this program, and there it's a dynamic site. In other words, we use RSS feeds to update the content automatically, mm-hmm. so it doesn't depend on Sharon mostly sitting and picking stuff and posting it. Although she does an excellent job of highlighting stories that are of we think real importance on a regular basis. So
thank you.
That's again something that we depend on for. Well, the content of the program here. There's a lot of stuff going on out there in the world. The globalists were busy not just with the Lisbon Treaty vote in Ireland, but also with the meeting of the G20, which some analysts believe essentially formalized the declaration that came out of the previous G20 meeting in April. That the International Monetary Fund is about to become, or has already become, the de facto central bank of the world. Mm-hmm. The IMF in the spring, it was announced, that had activated a currency that had been sort of developed in the late 1940s after the IMF was formed, and then sort of put on the shelf, not really used, this currency called special drawing rights. The last... special drawing rights were issued in about 1980 or 81 in the amount of $30 billion, but they're rarely used. $30 billion in the scope of global trade is a drop in the bucket. But now the SDR is printing money in the form of these SDRs to the tune of about $300 billion.
Yes, and it's not backed by anything.
No, it's not backed by anything. But then neither is the United States dollar, which is the de facto world reserve currency. The plan, apparently, is for the SDR to... become the world's reserve currency,
exactly.
replacing the United States dollar, which isn't necessarily a bad thing for the dollar, except that if the United States faces a global catastrophe or a war in which that we need to finance, I mean, a bigger war mm-hmm, than the one mm-hmm. we're already fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq, the Federal Reserve just can't create money out of thin air anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And expect global investors to sop up the debt by buying treasury bonds.
I do think it will be bad for the dollar, though, because there are a lot of dollars in circulation right now.
There are.
And if it were no longer the reserve currency, I think the value of the dollar is just going to plummet.
Which might result in what Dr. Jerome Corsi has been predicting for a couple of years now, which is then a new currency to replace the dollar.
Mm-hmm. He's been calling it the Amero. I don't know if it will be or not. I think that speaks to a temporary situation if it is the Amero.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think eventually we're going to have a world currency.
Right.
And it may be the SDR or based on the SDR.
Right. And the other key point here that's the takeaway from the article that's linked at PIDnews.com is that rather than just creating money and issuing more debt for investors to buy, the United States then would have to borrow against the global reserve currency, the SDR, which would mm-hmm. put the United States and the Fed at the mercy of international bankers.
Why, yes, it would.
Yes, which we technically already are anyway. It just would be a supranational bank, a global bank rather than one based here in the United States. So mm-hmm. another step down the road toward the one world government.
Exactly. Yeah. And this goes along with something we talked about last time, and that is the Half Past Human report that I read
yep.
previous week.
From George Ure.
Is it Half Past Human?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And urbansurvival.com.
Excuse me, Urban Survival, that's the other one. It's the WebBot project. It's based on lots and lots of spider crawling over the web to look at particular words and the clusters that they're forming. And again, I just got an email from George yesterday saying that he's really, really looking that there's even more evidence pointing to October 25, which is the date that we mentioned last time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm only reporting this. I honestly don't know what's going to happen. But if something were to happen on October 25 and I had failed to mention it to you, then I'm sorry, but that's inexcusable. I am telling you that this is what is being reported by Half Past Human. George Yor is saying that all signs are pointing to October 25, and possibly even a little earlier in the month. But for sure, October of this year may have a really bad downhill run.
And
so if you have money in the stock market right now, pull it out.
Yeah. Yeah, now we're not saying, we're certainly not, you know, recommending, and we talked about this before, going out and investing in precious metals or anything like that.
No, but I personally think that, I'm sorry, I'm going to use the word foolish because I really think it is. I don't think for 1 minute that if indeed we go to a one world system, mm-hmm. that large caches of gold are going to be permitted. I think that at the very least they're going to say, look, we need all the gold for victory's sake. Because in the early 20th century, they collected all of the gold coins. They went from how you couldn't keep them.
Right.
You had to turn them all in.
Under FDR, gold was confiscated, and it wasn't, it was many years before American citizens
and
could legally own gold.
And you can't eat gold.
No.
I know that there are some say that, you know, if it comes down to it, that you can bribe people with gold. But do you really think that if you have, let's say you have $2,000 worth of gold coins in your house, which in this case is 2 ounces about, mm-hmm. it's not much gold. Do you really think that if you say, I will give you this little bit of gold in exchange for your help getting out of town, do you think he's going to take just half your gold? He's going to take everything you've got and then more.
Yeah.
The best thing you can do, and I would say even at that point, if things really were to go south, I just don't think that $2,000 worth of gold, 2 gold coins, at a time when maybe gold would be worth $50,000 a coin, mm-hmm. I don't know. I think that the person would rather have, say, bag of beans.
Well, exactly, because ultimately that's what you have to do. You've got to exchange this medium of exchange, this coin of the realm, for something that you can eat mm-hmm. or heat mm-hmm. or, you know, a place to sleep.
Water is going to become the most precious commodity on earth.
So,
if you look at the book of Revelation, it is clear that the freshwater streams are going to die.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, our recommendations along these lines are, again, not intended to generate fear or not intended to recommend that you bolt the doors, batten down the hatches, and let the world outside your doors go to hell while you and your family have yours. The idea is to be able to offer from some supplies that, God willing, you've had the opportunity to lay in order to demonstrate the love of Christ to those who may be in need.
Amen. Amen. And I know that there are some out there who would say, well, I'm sorry, but if someone knocks on your door and says, you need to give me all your food because I understand you have quite a cache, then you share with them. And if they say, look, we want it all, not just part of it, or we will kill you, then you have to say, let me share the love of Christ with you. And if you decide to kill me, then all you have done is send me directly into the arms of God.
Yeah, I know it's easier to say sitting in the comfort of our bedroom right here, but that's what it comes down to. You can't threaten a true Christian with death because that is our reward.
Mm-hmm.
I just pray for the strength that, first of all, I pray that cup not be handed to me. But secondly, that if it is, that I can honor the Lord through my actions.
And once again, we are not saying any of this to instill fear.
Right.
Rejoice. Rejoice. When you see these things happening, look up, for your redemption draweth nigh. We need to rejoice in the fact that God's word is coming true. We need to rejoice in the fact that Jesus Christ paid his price, paid the price for your sins, for my sins, for anything we were going to do. He's already paid it. All we need to do is accept Christ's sacrifice. Believe in him, know that he's resurrected, know he's coming back. It's a pretty easy thing to do. It's not hard. Mm-hmm. But the day is coming when the Holy Spirit is no longer going to preach that message.
Yeah, and we understand that there will be times of anxiety and fear. I mean, when you read the Bible, you see that even the strongest of the Old Testament prophets were subject to fear and depression. Again, depend on the Holy Spirit and the Lord for your strength. And he will carry you through. Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, this last week there was a story that was taking place in Montana, and I think that there were many people, based on the forums that I was reading, there were a lot of people out there that were really freaking out about it.
Yes.
Thinking that indeed this is, that there were FEMA camps being set up. I think what was happening in Montana was nothing more than a scam. Now, I may be wrong on that, but it looked to me, if you really take a hard, long look at it, I think a lot of the locals were simply being scammed again, because I think they got scammed once already to build that big detention center with no prisoners, with a promise that, hey, if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
Well, they haven't come. The place is past a year now on their notes. They're in desperate situation, that mm-hmm. town, and I think you really need to pray for the town of Hardin, Montana, thank you. And also pray for the Becky Shea. She's the gal who's been out in the front. She was the one who was hired away from the Billings Gazette. She was a reporter there. She was hired away for $60,000 a year, which was probably double what she was making at the Gazette.
Just making a rough guess on what reporters make. Yeah,
they don't make a whole lot.
Don't make a whole lot.
Even if she were making more than that. But anyway, she got hired away for what she said was $60,000 a year, plus they were going to pay the down payment on her new home, plus they gave her a company car to drive, and she said she got a sign-on bonus. This woman has nothing now, nothing but tears. The last press conference that she hosted, she broke down several times, and she asked the cameras to simply please shut them off because I don't want to be on camera crying like this. You know, she's trying to be a trooper about it, but you know what? I think that in many ways she's scared, and she should be, because there are people involved in this scam that, you know what, you don't know what they're going to do. When a rat is cornered, sometimes it tries to run, sometimes it'll bite you.
It is a sad situation. This 489-bed facility is sitting empty. The guy who was supposedly the front man of this American police force that claimed, or that was awarded a multi-million dollar contract to administer this prison, is apparently one guy who goes by the name Michael Hilton, but is also gone by the names Miodrag Dokovic, Miodrag Jokic, Miodrag Djokovic, Michael Hamilton, Anthony M. Hilton, Michael A. Hilton, Michael Milton, Christian Jokic, and other variants.
Many. There were so many things about it that when I first looked into this story, one of our listeners sent me the link, and I first looked into the story probably over a week ago, and in fact, I think it was last Sunday, and there were so many earmarks about it that just raised major red flags to me, and it had nothing to do with FEMA camps. Mm-hmm. It was, my gosh, this guy can't be for real. For one thing, his name, Michael Hilton.
Yeah.
Hilton is a major player name in the United States. It you know, evokes images of lots of money.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, the money that they spent, the supposedly spent on the SUVs, the Mercedes SUVs that pulled into town, well, those first payments are due. Oh, they're overdue now.
Yeah, and by the way, one of those Mercedes SUVs is being driven by Becky Shea.
Well, as of a couple of days ago, it may have been collected by now. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but people are deserting that ship left and right. Michael Hilton has disappeared. Lawyer Mafi, who was representing them and who's a shady character himself, a personal injury lawyer, was representing this supposed international organization. Also, an Eddie Angelino, who is with Defense Products Solutions, which has also the look of a scam site.
Yeah. Angelino said that the American police force is not a company that is a worthwhile partner with which to do business, or something to that effect.
I know.
But the funny thing is, when you look at the website for Angelino's company, it, you know, without having the capability to actually track it down, let's just say that the website looks, it looks like one guy with a website is what it looks like. I mean, there's a distinct lack of specificity with what he claims to have accomplished, but anyway,
And I suppose it is possible that all these things are just cutouts for the CIA. As we get into the main issues that we're going to talk about today, you'll realize that there are many front companies to many faces to the octopus, so to speak.
Yeah.
I don't know. It could turn out that it is CIA, but just or some other company.
Well, if this was a CIA front
or Wackenhut sort of, or Z or which is Blackwater.
Yeah, then it certainly wasn't very well planned or executed. It was really sloppy. That's why I think, like you, that it was just a scam. This is way too sloppy for a professional operation.
And the country of Serbia is now threatening to sue.
Right, yeah.
Because he was using their coat of arms.
Yeah, the official logo for the American police force was the Serbian coat of arms. Oh, brother. Well, the story that we posted to the website yesterday as sort of tying together most of what we want to talk about today was kind of a surprise news story that popped up a couple of days ago, reported by Associated Press, that California authorities have finally filed charges in a triple murder from 1981.
Mm-hmm.
It was the murder of a gentleman named Fred Alvarez. Now, Alvarez was a former security chief for the Cabazon Band of Mission Indians.
Cabazon Indian Band, maybe what, 35, 50 members?
Well, at the time.
It's not very big.
In the late 70s and early 80s, there were fewer than two dozen of them. They've got about, I believe it's about 1,200 acres of land mm-hmm. as their reservation in Riverside County, California. That's east of Los Angeles, centered on or adjoining the town of Indio. Mm-hmm. California.
Okay, just in case you notice that there's a break in the action, it's because there was. I actually asked Derek if he could stop the recording for a second while he changed chairs. He's just about to get into the meat of the show, and it is really, it's hard for me to follow it. I've read and read on this, and he's done a lot of research the last few days. It's a complicated story that it's really important that you understand and be able to follow. And the dinging that his chair was doing was driving me batty, and I was afraid that it might actually be a distraction. So he's now in a different chair. It doesn't ding. It doesn't squeak. It doesn't make any noises.
It doesn't move. It doesn't. It will not bend.
It's not a fun chair at all.
It will not bend. It will not bow. It will not burn.
Okay, you had been, you'd gotten to Indio, California, and the murder of Fred Alvarez in 1981.
Yeah, Alvarez and two associates were assassinated in 1981, and it's long been thought that they were killed to shut up Alvarez because he was getting ready to go to authorities with allegations of financial impropriety and other illegal activity, including illegal, under United States law, arms deals being organized on the Cabazon Reservation. Now, the Cabazon Band at that time was headed up by essentially a CEO, a director by the name of John Philip Nichols.
Mm-hmm.
Nichols was not an Indian, but had been hired as a director. And I don't know how he became the director. That's, you know, beside the point. The point is that Nichols, and apparently through intelligence connections, was beginning to organize on the reservation a joint venture with the Wackenhut Corporation to produce arms for sale to countries that the United States prohibits the sale of arms to.
Exactly, because it's a sovereign nation on the Indian land,
right?
And you can get by with things.
Right. And this is something to remember, that under United States law and treaties with the Native American nations, reservations are essentially all but sovereign countries.
Mm-hmm.
And U.S. law and U.S. law enforcement has very little reach into these reservations. Now, at the time, the early 80s, the Cabazon Band had fewer than two dozen members. As of today, in fact, I checked their website yesterday, and there were fewer than 50 today. And they've got, what, 1,000, 1,200 acres, something like that, adjoining the town of Indio, California. Now,
gosh, by that definition, my family's a tribe.
Yes.
Can we get our own lands?
Melungian is not counted as a tribe, sadly. A man who founded a ministry, and this is identified in the AP story as a Christian ministry, named Jimmy Hughes, has been arrested in Miami, getting ready to fly back to Honduras, where his ministry operates, and charged with the triple murder.
Why has it taken so long to charge Jimmy Hughes with a 1981 murder?
That's the question, isn't it? And we'll put links in the show notes to a number of articles written by Virginia McCullough at newsmakingnews.com. She is out there in California And she and a couple of other writers for News Making News, but especially Virginia McCullough, have been tracking this story for years. And McCullough is one of the few reporters who has had direct contact with a man known to investigative reporters who've dug into this as The Dot.
The Dot?
Yeah, Michael Reconosciuto is his name, and if you're a longtime conspiracy researcher, that name should be familiar to you. Michael Reconosciuto is called by some researchers either Dot or The Dot. He's apparently an extremely bright man. He was described by one scientist who met him when he was a teenager as a genius. He said, "You don't remember a 16-year-old who shows up for his internship with his own argon laser." Okay. Reconosciuto is in prison and will be in prison until 2017, barring some sort of deal with the government. He was arrested and charged on drug charges some 20 years ago, early 90s, I believe. Sentenced to 20 years with release in 2017 for good behavior. Reconosciuto apparently has the ability, whenever you ask him about any conspiracy involving the U.S. government over the last 30 years, to somehow place himself in the center of the story. Mm-hmm. So that,
hence The Dot.
Right. When you're trying to connect the dots, he's always The Dot. So Reconosciuto was employed by John Philip Nichols as a research scientist and engineer for Cabazon Arms, which mm-hmm. was this joint venture between the Indian tribe and Wackenhut Corporation. Reconosciuto claims that not only were they developing things like night vision goggles and inexpensive but reliable automatic weapons manufactured, which they proposed to manufacture in Guatemala from Korean components for sale to governments like Libya or to places where the U.S. government did not allow arms sales anyway. Mm-hmm. And apparently there was a meeting and a demonstration of some of this technology to members of the Contra fighters in Nicaragua. Not only were they working on that, but they were working on some biological and chemical weapons, which supposedly were outlawed by Richard Nixon in the early 70s.
Well, didn't you tell me that Reconosciuto was a major cooker for LSD, of LSD?
Well, yeah, and that's part of the story or the legend about Reconosciuto. He had gravitated to San Francisco, Haight-Ashbury, during the Summer of Love era, mm-hmm. and was known to the drug community in San Francisco as one of the major chemists or cookers of LSD in the Bay Area.
So Dot connects him with David Duncan again.
Possibly so, yes, because that's when Dave Duncan was out in San Francisco. But anyway, Reconosciuto is tied into a number of different things that all center around the activities of this Cabazon band. One of the weapons that they were supposedly working on there was a biological weapon that was targeted to specific genetic markers.
Mm.
And in the letter that he sent to the to a party at Wackenhut, or at least a letter that came from Cabazon Arms, I didn't see a signature on the letter. It's linked, and a scan of it is posted at newsmakingnews.com. And again, we'll link to all of this in the show notes so you can read this for yourself, because it sounds like a movie script or mm-hmm. treatment. Proposed selling this to nations bordering on Russia, you know, Central Asian nations. So again, kind of a bizarre out there thing. The bottom line, though, is that they were working on stuff on this reservation that would have been highly illegal anywhere else in the United States. But because it was on a reservation, U.S. law apparently didn't apply there. Now think about this. The Cabazon Band is a small little band. You know, again, fewer than 50 people mm-hmm. today. How many other reservations are there around the country, and how many of them might be used for similar activities, black mm-hmm. ops projects funded by black bag budgets from various letter agencies inside the U.S. government?
Well, that's a really good question. And the one thing that we talked about earlier, the Montana deal,
mm-hmm.
that land in Hardin borders on the Crow Nation land.
The Crow Nation, right. That's an important point to bring up. So back to Jimmy Hughes. Fred Alvarez was apparently going to go to reporters and to the government with these allegations that John Philip Nichols and his associates, including Michael Riconosciuto, were engaging in this trade. And it's important to note that Wackenhut was founded by and is staffed by primarily former law enforcement and intelligence operatives from the United States, guys who still have a lot of connections to intelligence, law enforcement, and military. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
This guy, Jimmy Hughes, says that, well, he doesn't say, but it's alleged that he was paid by John Philip Nichols to go out and take out Fred Alvarez, and then the two friends apparently were collateral damage. Jimmy Hughes has posted to a website for the Full Gospel Businessmen's Fellowship his life story under the title A Hitman with a New Mission, in which he admits that after a six-year hitch in the military, I became a professional hitman for the mafia. Well, maybe not the Sicilian mafia, but perhaps the
company mafia.
Company, yeah. And he claims, one day I had a contract on a man, and I'm quoting now, they had paid me a lot of money to kill this person. I traveled over many states and walked into the man's house one day, pulled out my pistol, and put a bullet in everybody's head, end quote. Hughes was the security chief who'd been hired, apparently, after Fred Alvarez quit. Served as the security chief for the Cabazon Band, hired by John Philip Nichols. Why are they arresting Hughes now after, 29 years?
Mm-hmm.
28 years? Perhaps because he's posting stuff like this to the internet and doesn't want, and you know, whoever wants to keep a lid on this doesn't want Hughes getting too vocal about what he's doing. Now, you looked in on the website for Hughes' mission and his ministry down in Honduras.
It seemed really generic to me. There's a video there that I assume is to be played in churches for youth groups, trying to get youth groups to come down for short-term missions. It was moving, but it was extremely generic. You didn't see Hughes himself actually interacting with the kids. These kids could have been anywhere, you know. We have good friends who run a children's home over in Thailand, and when they were in their home church in Missouri, they saw a movie that was probably similar to the one that's posted on the internet at the Hughes site. They were moved and sold everything and went over to Thailand. When they got there, they found out it was a scam. Of course, Michael Hilton wasn't there, but he could have been. they found out it was a scam, but they were moved there by God for his reasons, and they ended up taking it over and actually turning it into a genuine Christian outreach to these orphans. And they're still there, and it's amazing the changes they've made. But now I don't know for sure that what's going on in Honduras is a scam, but the website – and I'm sorry, what?
Well, I was going to say it's important to note that – Protestant missionaries, and I use that in air quotes, throughout the 70s and 80s were used by the United States intelligence community to contact and finance Contra rebels and anti-communist rebels in Central America.
Exactly. And sometimes missionaries are used that way. Sometimes groups that are so-called Christian groups that are actual NGOs are nothing more than cutouts for intelligence operations.
Right. So that is a point to consider. And
if he was a company man, there's a saying, you never are an ex-company man. Now, I don't know. He says he worked for the mafia, but I sincerely doubt if he had been working in intelligence that he would say, I used to be a hitman for the intelligence agent.
Exactly. You know. Exactly. So we hope that that Hughes does know the Lord, because he's certainly going to have to rely on him.
But you know, there's no statement of faith at that site. I looked and looked and looked, and that's usually one of the first things you put up if you're calling yourself a minister of the gospel and you're asking people to come and join you in a ministry. You put down what it is you believe.
So we've got back to the Cabazon Band and the reason that Fred Alvarez was murdered, allegedly by Jimmy Hughes, the illegal activity taking place there. Sending arms to nations on the restricted, you know, that were officially enemies of the United States, finding a way to supply arms to the Contras in Nicaragua to fight, you know, communists down there, which was going against the will of Congress, and thus is sort of tangentially related to the whole Iran-Contra affair. But more than that, we get through Michael Reconosciuto and the Cabazon Band into the whole Promise software mess that we've made references to before. And because it was at the Cabazon Reservation that Michael Reconosciuto claims he modified the Promise software, which was then illegally sold to other foreign governments. Well, not illegally, but it was offered and sold to foreign governments. It was apparently illegally obtained by the guy who sold it. And in fact, Insight magazine did an investigation on this a few years back. Now, Insight, okay, I know it's owned by the Washington Times, which means it's owned by Sun Myung Moon, but okay, the reporter documented, and, you know, her sources and so forth. The Royal Canadian Mounted Police, RCMP, back in 2000, entered the United States to conduct an eight-month secret investigation into what had happened with Promise Software. After Reconosciuto publicly claimed that he had modified the software and put back doors into the software to allow the NSA, once this had been sold to a foreign government, to access this foreign government's use of the software.
Exactly, and you can understand why this RCMP would be very concerned, because they were using the software.
That is exactly right. Now, Promise was developed by a guy named Bill Hamilton while he was working for the U.S. Department of Justice. It's called Prosecutors Management Information Software. It's case management software. It's been heavily modified in years since, but it's still in use today, more than almost 30 years after it was developed. After he left the Department of Justice, Hamilton wanted to take the software private, and the U.S. government essentially took the software from him. Long legal fight that took place, during which Reconosciuto made these claims about how it was stolen from Hamilton. The U.S. Department of Justice claims that since Hamilton developed while he was on their payroll, it should belong to the DOJ. All right. The software was offered to a guy named Dr. Earl Bryan. Bryan was a friend of then Attorney General Ed Meese, Attorney General under Ronald Reagan. And Bryan was allowed to profit. And again, these are the claims made by Reconosciuto. Bryan was allowed to profit from this software and the sale of it as his payoff for helping to engineer what's been become known as the October Surprise, which was an alleged $40 million payoff by the U.S. government, handled by Bryan, to the government of Iran, so that Iran wouldn't release the American hostages that have been held for, what was it, almost 6 months?
444 days.
Okay, over a year. 444 days. They were held in Iran, and this payoff was to keep the hostages in Iran until after Ronald Reagan was elected, until after the election, because it was thought that if Carter was able to get, Jimmy Carter was able to get the hostages out, he might win the election. That's never been proven.
But it was alleged by, was it Bo Gritz who?
Right, yeah. So you've got that connection now to Iran. Reconosciuto also claims that a Justice Department attorney named Mike Abell had dealings with the Cali drug cartel. And here's the bizarre story that ties to Flight 180 of Pan Am Flight 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland. Reconosciuto claims he also worked as an undercover operative in a DEA sting operation in Lebanon. The Drug Enforcement Agency was apparently involved in a sting to trace shipments of heroin from the Bekaa Valley in Lebanon to cities in the United States, which had large Muslim populations like Detroit. Now, according to Reconosciuto, and a former DIA, Defense Intelligence Agency operative named Lester Coleman, the real culprit behind the bombing of Flight 103 is not Muammar Gaddafi. It was a man who, it was an organization called the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which had been hired by the government of Iran to retaliate against the United States for shooting down an Iranian Airbus flight by the USS Vincennes. Now, add to that a gentleman named Chuck McKee, who was a CIA, well, was he CIA or DIA? Anyway, McKee was an operative in Lebanon at the American Embassy in Beirut, who was supposedly a top-notch black ops guy, mm-hmm. whose job it was to find American hostages in Lebanon and get them out. They were looking into 9 American hostages that were held in Beirut, and it was found that this... and this is, by the way, from an article published in Time magazine in 1993, so it's not like this is secret information. The major media has reported this story. 1992, I'm sorry. McKee was working for the Defense Intelligence Agency, like Coleman, and had found where these 9 American hostages were being held, but then also found that they were being held by a group tied to the organization that was running the drugs out of Lebanon. A group with Syrian ties named Manzer al-Kassar. Kassar was a Syrian drug dealer who was cooperating with the DEA, not the DIA, but perhaps playing both sides of the fence. Al-Kassar was approached by the head of the PFLP, the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, mm-hmm. to get his help in blowing up an American flight. Al-Kassar found out that... Major McKee and his team were planning to rescue the hostages, but also expose his drug running operation. And by the way, another little tendril of this octopus is that Al-Kassar's operation was run by Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North.
Yes, exactly.
Al-Kassar given $1.5 million by North and his group to purchase weapons for Iran. So,
Ross Perot even figures into some of this.
Well, that's something I didn't even
think about. He bankrolled a rescue attempt.
That's right, he did. So the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, was allowing this Syrian drug runner, Al-Kassar, to continue running drugs from Lebanon through Frankfurt, Germany, to the United States so they could track the shipments. However, the Defense Intelligence Agency, guys like Coleman and McKee, found out that what were supposed to be controlled shipments had turned into a flood of shipments, apparently because elements within the U.S. intelligence community were using the drugs as profit to finance their other mm-hmm. operations, among them perhaps Iran-Contra. Again, this is such a tangled web. I barely got a grasp on this myself.
Well, supposedly it's not the first time they've done that. If you take a look at Vietnam and Air America, I mean, that was going on then too.
Right, right. So and by the way, the intelligence agency were paying off their informants and operatives in this whole sting operation on traveler's checks that were drawn from the Bank of Commerce and Credit International, BCCI, in Luxembourg, of which...
Yet another tendril.
Another tendril, yeah, because Neil Bush was connected to that. And
yeah, and it also, Brancaccio claims that he is also connected to some of the savings and loan collapses that took place during... Mm-hmm. The '70s and '80s,
right, right. So again, there's a lot of there, and you can barely keep it straight. And a lot of what Brancaccio says is not verifiable. But what is here and what we're trying to present is stuff that's been independently verified by other known documented facts.
Well, with regard to Lockerbie, Scotland, the Flight 103, when you spoke with Susan Lindauer. Mm-hmm. She got into a lot of that, didn't she?
She did, and we'll have that on View from the Bunker next weekend. But yes, her CIA handler, Dr. Richard Fuse, said that it was Abu Nidal, notorious terrorist, was actually the man who handled the operation at the behest of the PFLP mm-hmm. and Manzer al-Kassar. So the bottom line is that Kassar, who, by the way, was... his wife was related to the Syrian president, Hafez Assad. We're taking over the drug production in the Bekaa Valley. Their operation was threatened by Charles McKee and his counterterrorist team operating out of Beirut. Al-Qassar had also been contacted by the Palestinians who were being paid by the Iranians to retaliate for the shooting down of that Iranian jet. So McKee and four other members of his team decided to return to the United States with evidence that this operation was in place and that Al-Qassar's operation may hinder their rescue attempt to get the American hostages out. They packed up maps, photographs of the locations where the hostages were being held, and $500,000 in cash for their rescue operation, and got on
an American flight.
And got on an American flight, which was against
Pan Am,
procedure.
But I mean, it's an American-owned flight.
Right, exactly. I mean, for security procedures, according to Coleman, they weren't supposed to fly an American flight back to the U.S., just in case they were targets, or an American flight was targeted. Anyway, Al-Qassar found out about this, put the operation into play, and had the bomb swapped out in Frankfurt, Germany, the suitcase swapped in Frankfurt, Germany, and that's what caused the plane to blow up. In other words, it was an operation not conducted by Libya per se. It was the Syrian drug runners who brought it down in order to prevent this counter-terrorist unit working for the Defense Intelligence Agency from blowing the lid off his drug-running operation, while at the same time fulfilling a contract from Tehran to retaliate against the United States.
How much of this did Alvarez know?
Alvarez probably didn't know any of this stuff at all. I mean,
he was going to only report on those things that were taking place.
Well, because and besides, Flight 103 took place in 1988,
yeah,
and Alvarez was killed in 1981.
1981, yeah.
So, I mean, this is all, again, going back to the dot, Michael Reconosciuto, and the stuff that was happening through you know, the Cabazon Band.
Mm-hmm. And the whole Iran-Contra Reconosciuto thing was taking place.
Right. And Reconosciuto claims to, again, as part of this DEA sting operation, he claims to have been part of this. He did describe the safe house that the DEA operated in Cyprus. And Coleman says that while he's never met Reconosciuto, you know, Coleman, again, the former DIA operative, never met Reconosciuto, he did accurately describe the house and details of the house that he wouldn't have known unless he had been there. So Reconosciuto apparently had been in some way connected to this drug sting operation that somehow turned into an intelligence financing operation. And if that sounds fantastic, just remember that, you know, San Jose Mercury News reporter Gary Webb documented the CIA's introduction of crack cocaine into the United States as another means. Right,
MENA, Arkansas?
Through MENA, Arkansas, as another means of generating profits that could be used for its own black budget operations.
And Danny Casolaro was trying to put all of it together.
Right.
And he died in 1991.
Right. He was suicided in West Virginia for all of this. So, and again, there's a lot here, and it's impossible to do this justice in 25 minutes. But one interesting little side note here, and the reason that Libya was perhaps blamed for this is that back in the 1970s, a CIA agent named Edwin P. Wilson was tasked by the agency of going to Libya and training forces loyal to Muammar Gaddafi, who was, gosh, isn't it hard to believe he's the longest surviving head of state in the world right now, Muammar Gaddafi. Anyway, training forces for Muammar Gaddafi that Gaddafi could then use to spread jihad around the world. Apparently, the United States during the 70s wanted Gaddafi to serve as a counterweight in influence to Anwar Sadat in Egypt. So Wilson went to Libya and began bringing in arms to Libya that the United States would, again, not officially sanction. He also brought in special forces guys, supposedly retired, but the claim is that some of these guys were still active duty Green Berets, to train terrorist forces in Libya. And sure enough, after they'd been at their work for a little while, things started blowing up and people started dying all over the place. Wilson didn't come to the attention officially of the U.S. government until he brought 20 tons of C4.
20 tons
of military-grade C4 into Libya.
20 tons?
Now, to give you an idea of how much that is, that was equivalent to the entire stockpile of the government of the United States at the time. The United States had 20 tons of C4 in its arsenal, and this guy moved 20 tons from the United States to Libya. Now, he was eventually prosecuted and thrown into jail, and the CIA denied that he ever worked for the agency. But in 2003, after he'd been incarcerated for some, 27 years, in 2004, Wilson was released from prison. A federal judge said that the CIA's claims about him, that he was a rogue operative, out on his own, were a bunch of lies.
Well,
this is like the plot of the movie Syriana.
Exactly. We've told you so many times to watch that movie. If you haven't watched it, watch it. You got to watch it.
So Libya gets the blame for this, which they were able to pin on the rogue operations of this guy, Wilson, who was actually doing what the CIA wanted him to do, in order to avoid having to explain why the CIA and the DEA were aiding, abetting, and protecting a heroin-running operation run by Syria out of Lebanon into the United States. Now, you remember Syria cooperated in Gulf War I. Was this a quid pro quo by President George H.W. Bush to let Syria off the hook for Pan Am Flight 103 in exchange for supporting the war against Iraq the first time?
Could have been part of it.
So
Could have been part of it. Well, I know that we're probably getting close to an hour.
Yeah.
We've had a very complicated story that there is no way that I know you've done more justice to it than I ever could. But it is an extremely complicated story. We urge you to take a look at the linked articles, read through them, because since Jimmy Hughes has now been arrested for this murder, it is possible if, and this is a big if it makes it to court, that some of this will actually make it to the headlines.
It's possible, although I wouldn't hold my breath.
No, I wouldn't either, and that's why I say if
it
makes it to court.
Now, and there are a couple of sources that you can read online. One, of course, is Lester Coleman's book, The Trail of the Octopus, from inside the DEA, written by Lester Coleman and co-written by a former editor of the New York Times. It had never been published in the United States before. Donald Goddard is the other author's name. Never been issued in the United States or published in the United States before this year. Apparently in August, with the news that came out about the release of the one man convicted for the bombing of Flight 103, Al-Megrahi, an American publisher has finally picked up the book and will publish it in the United States, or has published it now, perhaps. But it is available to read for free online, the entire manuscript, and we'll put a link to that in the show notes, as well as the book that we've referred to many times, The Final Circle, or The Last Circle, by Cherie Seymour, which
is
essentially...
She goes under the pen name Carol Marshall.
Right. It is essentially a rough draft of a book that was never published.
And but because of that, it reads like just...
A
collection of notes. So it's a little tough to follow. Plus, she admits in there that not everything is in it.
Probably partly for concern for her own safety.
Possibly.
But here was something that she included in the book that I think ties this all together and gets back to why we do PID radio in the first place. This is from an account she gives of a meeting with a gentleman named Robert Booth Nichols, who was no relation to John Philip Nichols, but was an investor in Cabazon Arms, the joint venture between the Indians and Wackenhut. Carol Marshall had gone with another freelance writer named John Littman to meet Robert Booth Nichols at his house. And I quote now from The Last Circle. At one point during our conversation, and completely out of context with what we were discussing, Nichols played a videotape of the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. The southern wall of Nichols' apartment contained a 6-foot-wide screen on which I watched a blown-up, enlarged, slow-motion, uncut version of the famous Zapruder film. I watched what appeared to be the standard media version of the film, seen so many times in film clips over the years. But then Nichols slowed the camera even more, and on the 6-foot screen, I observed the driver of the limousine turn to his right, first looking at Connolly, then at Kennedy. The driver's left hand came over his right shoulder, and he was holding a long-barreled gun. Smoke and a bullet emerged from the gun, traveling ever so slowly across the screen into Kennedy's head, blowing brain tissue into the air as he fell back against the seat. Now, skipping down, I wondered if the video had been tampered with. I asked Nichols where he'd obtained the original uncut version. He would not say. I had no idea that his FIDCO partner, FIDCO was the name of Nichols' construction firm, which incidentally was negotiating for contracts to aid in the rebuilding of Beirut after the civil war there.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. That his FIDCO partner, Clint Murchison Jr.'s father, Clint Murchison, big oil man in Texas, mm-hmm. allegedly involved in the plot, had instant access to the Zapruder film immediately after the assassination in Dallas, Texas. Nichols studied me for the longest time, then walked over to the window and lit a cigarette. He finally commented that the CIA can cover up anything it wants, even a president's murder. He wanted to show me the power of the octopus. Nothing is as it appears to be, he said. And here's the money quote, skipping down. Nichols' sister was allegedly a professional hypnotherapist, and Nichols himself was reportedly trained in the art of hypnotism. According to Riconosciuto, they all called themselves the Chosen Ones, wore skull and crossbone rings, and shared a common interest, if you could call it that, in the old German SS occultism, its tribal and inner circle rites. End quote.
Which takes us to exactly what we keep talking about. It's the spirits.
Yes.
Behind the humans.
Yes. Reference the work of Russ Dizdar with Chosen Ones and the interest of these altars in German lore, German occultism. Mm-hmm. Reference the work of Peter Lavenda on the occult beliefs and the spiritual workings of the Nazis during the Hitler era and since. And it begins to tie together a little bit. It's still looking through a glass darkly, but it makes a little more sense as to what's really behind what drives much of the politics of the physical realm in which we live.
Well, Sam just woke up.
I guess so that means it's time to finish
the
show.
By the way, you may have heard him snoring during the show. We're apparently really boring him today. Before we go, I want to thank Denise and Frederick, who sent us a really wonderful donation via snail mail, and Jared, who once again helped to support PID Radio through PayPal. You know, you folks, we so appreciate you. We're going to be able to get new headphones, so that's a big deal for us. We've been going for about 5 years now on the headsets that we wear now, and we're going to try to improve the quality of the audio just a little bit with a bit better setup,
right.
And the donations that you've made have given us just a little extra so we can do that. So thank you very much.
Amen to that. There's a little artifact that I think comes from this headset every time I move my head, and it's just because it's a little loose and it makes a little noise in the background.
Well, you're making all kinds of noise over there, aren't you?
I am. And if you'd like to make some noise, you can, of course, leave us your message, a voice message, any time of the day or night by calling 1-317-489-9350. That's 1-317-489-9350. And if you didn't write that down, don't worry. The number is posted there at PIDradio.com, where you'll find the show notes with links to all of these mind-blowing articles and books that refer to the stuff we talked about today.
That's right. By the way, don't forget the Bruce Collins Show starts on WSMN 1590 AM, and it's going to be starting on October the 10th at 10 AM.
Look forward to that. It's not often that you get an opportunity to bring up topics like we discuss on terrestrial mainstream, and I'll put that in quoting marks, radio.
I know. Hey, speaking of that, you have an interview tonight with someone who's doing that very thing.
Amen. Yes. Dr. Future will be on View from the Bunker tonight. We'll talk about his experience at the International Institute of Integral Human Sciences, which is a group similar to the Institute of Noetic Sciences,
mm-hmm.
which we'll also discuss.
Ions.
Yeah, and essentially their research into scientific means of becoming possessed.
Huh.
That's basically what it boils down to. And, boy, some exciting stuff coming up. Next week we'll talk to Susan Lindauer, who is only woman arrested under the Patriot Act,
mm-hmm.
And what she knows about why we went to war with Iraq, and her information about Pan Am Flight 103, and got confirmation of an interview with Constance Cumby, and we'll talk with her about the influence of the New Age movement on evangelical Christianity.
So that should be available two weeks from today.
Right. So, until then, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody. I'm
gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear. A better day is coming soon to get us out of
and living in the past. God can do a new thing now in a kingdom that will last. He'll make a way across your wilderness like a river flows in desert land. There's a new day coming, a new
This is PID Radio.